Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn. How deeply grateful I am you chose to be with me on this second day of December 2018. We like to call this program Satsang, Heart to Heart Communion, talking about things that, might be of interest to you. Questions that people put to me all the time. I'm very grateful for the questions and for the listener participation, because without that, I don't know if we'd even be here. What the heck? Anyway, I'm grateful that I'm here. We're going to talk today a little bit. If God is love, then why these things? And we'll talk a little bit about this, okay? And I'm sure it will be of some interest to you. We're in our year-end fundraising drive, and we really do need your support. These radio programs are supported solely and entirely upon your tax-deductible gifts. Sponsorship is our big thing. And when a person becomes a sponsor, it allows us to coordinate our budget and make things happen, pay our bills on time, et cetera, which is very, very important. So here is the offering. I would like you to become a sponsor. If you are enjoying these radio programs, my TV programs that you see on the website at aspire.org, please understand that all of these things, you have to know, cost money. We have to pay the bills. So here's the deal. If you become a sponsor, our mystery donor will match your donation penny for penny. So if you become, let's say, a sponsor for a monthly contribution of $25, he will make it $50. And that really helps us. A sponsor is someone who does a quarterly or monthly donation each and every month, if you're a monthly person. And in all of that, you get not only to serve humankind in this way, which your gift goes far further than radio and TV, it goes into hospice and all the other things I do for free to help people. The donation also includes that you will be a part of my commentaries that I do twice a month. They're pretty intensive stuff, podcasts, video casts that go along with that, along with the message of the month, which will be sent to you, or you can download it on our website, from our website, I should probably say, at aspire.org. And you get access to all 122 discourses that were done over the years for my TV programs. They're really wonderful discourses. They go into much deeper subjects than what I offer on TV. There just wasn't enough time. So these are much more lengthy, and they will help you more. Subjects like the Eightfold Path, the Heart of the Tao, Nobody Likes You Anyway. What is the point of it all? Which will soon be airing on the Aspire website in January. So you have all of these wonderful offerings, and I hope that you will become a sponsor. Just go to the website at aspire.org, and there on the front splash page, you will see year-end donations. Just click on that. It'll tell you everything you needed to know, and it just might be something that you're willing to really have a great deal of insight into, and some kindness in your heart, and to see that, this world just isn't going to change unless you and I as individuals change, which is the big thing. If God is love, what does that mean? I get this all the time from people. They'll send me, well, if God were this and God were that, and I want you to understand, I don't speak for God, okay? God is not a man. I want you to understand that it's not an anthropomorphic being. God is not some creator that sits in the clouds somewhere. We make God into the image of our own likeness, our mental acuity. We create God as a state of our own mental acuity. And because we do that, we miss the whole opportunity of what it is to have the direct experience. So in this realm, on this earthly planet, everything has to have a face, a body, a persona, an ego, blah, blah. And we've done this to God. We've made up the idea of God. Am I an atheist? Absolutely not. Sound like an atheist? Probably to some people I do, but I'm really not. And the whole effort here is to understand the nature of something that is greater than ourselves in the sense of our human body and our egotistical ideals. And we have a hard time imagining that anything is greater than what we can think. That's just the way we are. It's an arrogance that is undeniable. So let's get into this a little bit. The first question comes from Judy in Los Angeles. She talks about enjoying listening to the program. Why do we have free will? If God is love, why would he do this, Judy? Judy, what makes you think you have free will? Really? We have a glass ceiling. I mean, we can only do so many things. We don't even make choices. Our biology makes the choice. Our genetics make the choice. Our DNA makes the choice. If you're in a life and death situation, you don't have any choice. You can say, well, I could live or die. No, you will want to live, and you will probably do everything you can to live for as long as you possibly can. If you're in any given situation, it will be via impulse and chemicals in your body. Read Behave. If you read that book, Stephen does an excellent job of explaining it all to you. It explains a lot of things about what we're all about, why we do the impulse things we do. It is all biology. That's all it is. So when you feel impulse to do something, whatever that is, it is the impulse of the body's chemistries and hormones that make it all happen. So what makes you think we have free will? You're going to do what your genetics are going to do. You're going to do what your body's going to do. You're going to do exactly what your body tells you to do. And your mind, well, same thing. How many thoughts can you have? What makes you think the thoughts you have come from God? Or what makes you think that you have a choice in the thoughts? What if there were other thoughts in any given situation that you might be in that you had not thought of, that you are incapable of thinking of? You're incapable of thinking of it because of your genetic disposition and, of course, the chemicals that roam around in the brain. And this is all you could think of to do. You know, when I was a little boy, I always tell this to my students. They roll their eyes, but it's true. When my mother would yell at me for something I did, she would say, "How could you be so thoughtless?" And I would look at her and say, "Well, if I didn't have the thought, how can I be blamed when I didn't have a choice? I just didn't. That thought never occurred to me." And she would just get furious with me. Exasperating little five-year-old. But the truth of the matter is there are many, many thoughts that we have about ourselves, our life, that come from our genetics and also our environment and our impressionistic thinking, which comes oftentimes from our chemistry in our body. So you start to see how your life is lived from the point of making a choice to live from your body and to think of yourself as a mere body. And as long as you think of yourself from that point of view, you will miss. Now, there are other opportunities. Through meditation, you can drop the mind. Through the meditation and achieving that beautiful essence of emptiness, you can come to a point where you don't need thought to think. Yes, you will not need thought to think. And this is the beauty of meditation. It is the ability to have impression. Impression is far different than thought itself. In thought, there are complications. There's a beginning, a middle, and an end. If you want to do something interesting, just sit with yourself quietly and watch, how does a thought enter into my attention? Where is the beginning of it? Where's the middle of it? And where's the end of it? Examine it as though it were a thing, because basically it is a thing. Just watch it. Watch every thought that crosses your mind. Don't own the thought. Don't disown the thought. Just watch the quality of the thought and how it works inside of you, how it cultivates itself in you, where it came from. Now, if you do this, and you do this with a sense of, let's say, observation, you will start to realize, as I did years ago, this thing does not exist. It is only a facade of my ego, a facade of my genetics, a facade of my DNA. And as I start to see it for what it is, then you start to be able to step back from it. And Judy, as you step back from it, you will also be stepping back from your emotional nature. And a great deal of our emotions generate our thoughts. And emotions are chemistry also. The chemistry you have in your body often dictates, in fact, does dictate my emotional, your emotional impulses. So the more you have all of this, the more impulses you're going to have, the more you're going to experience what you experience or think you are. And for the sad part of it all is that usually, for most people, this is the sum and substance of their entire life, just what they can think. Nothing more, nothing less, just what they can think. So there you are. Why do we have free will? We don't. If you live by the body, you will die by the body, as it were, all throughout your life, every day of your life. But if you can live a little separate from your thinking, if you can back off your emotions and watch and learn to recognize what a thought is, you can transcend every thought you've ever had. You can start to understand the nature of your thoughts, and they won't be as aggressive to you as maybe they once were. And you will start to see them for what they are within you. Just something for you to think about. I hope that helps you, Judy. Please forgive me. Namaste. The next one is from Linda, and she does not tell me where she lives. Why are people born with limits and afflictions? If God is love, I don't understand this. A lot of people would like to say that there's bad karma involved. The typical student, and I'm grateful you didn't say that, the typical student will go into the assumption that a person has bad karma and that's why they have the issues they have. But that would simply be a strange assumption and something that is a prelude to more and more of my own bad karma by judging it that way. You have to learn to discern and watch. For everything that a person enters into, for every body that they enter into, there is some deep, deep inner purpose to it. It is a kind of a biological thing that we enter into. Why we enter into that, and does karma have anything to do with it? Karma has everything to do with it, but is it punishment? No. We are never, ever, ever being punished. So don't start thinking that you're being punished because you see someone with an affliction, or you yourself have one, or something of misfortune comes into your life, and you start to look at it and think to yourself, well, what did I do to deserve this? If we could really watch ourselves, just as a side note here, if we could really watch ourselves and really see what it is we're doing in the course of our lifetime, we would be shocked at what putzes we are, spiritually speaking. We are vengeful, hateful, resentful, and constantly, constantly up to our mischief, spiritually speaking. So it's amazing to me that we weren't born in more and more difficulties, but I just want to lay this out on you, Linda. I want you to think about this. Isn't being born human enough? Isn't that enough of a difficulty? I mean, really, if you think about it, think of all the things you and I go through in the course of our life, strictly because we're human. The fact that we have to survive and put food in our stomachs, that we have to have clothing, that we have to be social animals, that we have to be ill, and that we have to take care of our teeth, our carcass at all levels. You start to think about it, your whole life could be wrapped up in just doing that. And for the most part, our whole life is. We're always looking for pleasure over pain. We're always looking for something good over what we think of as bad. We constantly look at our life and see it for what it is, difficult. And we make it difficult because we do have a physical body. So there are various forms of this physical body. Some people are coming into this world with full health, but they don't use their life very well. And they use it to eat, drink, and be merry kind of person. I have lots of people like that I've known. They have good health and they squander it on living for the convention of just having a family, not really looking deeper inside themselves and trying to figure out what this is all about. I can tell you what it's all about in a very, simplistic way. We are here to break the chain, the cycle of birth and death. That's it. There is nothing more to it. What draws me into this body? Why do I go through the birth and the death cycle over and over and over again? Am I merely a matter of species? Is that what I'm all about? And if you start to look at these deeper questions, and they're not, to me, very deep, but they do provoke a depth eventually, you start to really realize, I am not here to keep this cycle going. And for what purposes would that be? No, you have to go deeper, more profoundly into the heart of your life. If you're going to break the cycle of birth and death, if any one of us is, it is going to be done through love. It is going to be done first through the recognition of what we are. And number two, in that what we are as love, how to liberate ourselves in this world from the very things that cause us the most unhappiness, the most damage, the most sickening of all things, which is the curse of going through another lifetime again and again and again without any sense of understanding of who and what we are. We have to have a who in the beginning. And then we have to be able to drop the who for the sake of the what. And then after we drop the what, there is only what is. And that is the nature of the soul. Right now, we don't have souls. We'd like to believe we do. Everybody will say, oh, I have a soul. Everybody has a soul. Well, show me your soul. Where does it exist within you? How does it exist within you? What is a soul? Your soul is the nature of your deepest relationship with life itself as love. People don't generally have that. The only relationship that they generally have is with their body. And when they live with their body as their body, through their body, they miss the entire experience of what it is to spiritually awaken. People live to have an advantage. People get involved in the practice for a while, thinking that it would give them an advantage over maybe their body, maybe their life, maybe their past. But this is an ill state of motivation. You enter into an authentic spiritual practice to understand not how to overcome our limits, our biological limits, our pedestrian mentality, all of that. You enter in to break the cycle. And once you understand the cycle of birth and death and what causes it, then everything that you face in the course of your lifetime with and through your physical body is just an anomaly. You start to really see the nature of why it's there, why people are born the way they are born, where they are born, what the whole occasion of their life is all about. You start to see it for what it truly is. So why are people born with limits and afflictions, you ask Linda? Well, it could be things that we carry with us. All of us have afflictions. All of us do. I have them. Everybody does. The biggest being that of the human body. And what causes me to generate and incarnate into a human carcass once again? Ignorance, arrogance, vanity, things like that. And until we are willing to live beyond the beyond, to live beyond the ideals of our human body and our human experience, we are just going to continue this cycle. And we will live emotionally. And that never, never works. Not for the higher. Think about it, Linda. You have to want love more than wanting what you think is love. Please forgive me. Namaste. And the last question from Brenda in, Brea, California. She just simply asks, if God is love, how can I be me? Why am I me? Brenda. Brenda, one of the biggest fallacies, biggest illusions in this world is to think there's a me. What is a me? What are we talking about when we talk about the idea of a me? What constitutes me? My ego, my pride, my indifference towards spirituality, my indifference towards authentic love, to live strictly emotional in my emotionality? Probably so. Most people are told, don't seek the way, just follow the emotions. And if you follow your emotions, you'll always be right, because people aggrandize them as feelings. They're not the true feel of your life. There is a vast difference between the feel of your life and emotionality, feelings. Feeling is one thing. Feelings are many things. If you have feelings, you are living emotionally, and you're going to have the pedigree of your own genetic nature come at you in the onslaught of instincts and this impetuous need for desire, ambition, and pride. But when you're willing to drop that for the sake of the heart, of coming to your heart, of recognizing the state of your spiritual heart, then something of the other shore can reach you. Something of love can reach you. I've met many, many people in the course of my lifetime. Most of them were highly emotional, and they thought of themselves as the me. They let these emotions decide, coordinate themselves inside themselves as forms of schizophrenia and psychosis, neurosis, all sorts of things. Most people don't like the me that they think they are. So they do things like drugs and alcohol and behaviors that, tear apart at the very fiber of what it means to be authentic. And it is to be authentic that really matters, not a me. So Brenda, when you are ready to do something amazing, truly amazing, it will be because you want to drop this me for the sake of the authentic love that is existing as the totality of your essence, of your beingness. It is called your soul. And once it is recognized, and once it is realized, then something magnificent can happen to you. Something from the other shore. It's called love. And love, as Jesus said, is what God is. God is love. I gotta go. I hope that helped you, Brenda. Please forgive me, eh? Namaste. Well, there's another weekend for you. I hope it helped. I hope that you got some playful insight here. I'll be back on the air next week. Please forgive me, eh? Namaste.